Hello, this is Stefan Molyneux of Freedom Aid Radio. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. This is a conversation that I had with a listener who was a donator from about a year ago and then gave me a large donation more recently at the same time as two other listeners had given large donations. And there were technical issues. My computer blew up and I had to sort of get a new computer, so I couldn't give him the goodies like the novels and the audiobooks and so on that I give to those who donate significant amounts of money. And so he sent me an email wherein he asked me, he said, did I donate more or less than the other guys? He said, this is a competition, you know, and I want to know in what place I came. And I said, this is just for your false self, though. And I said where he stood in the rank of donators. And he said, ew, that sounds bad. I thought it was a bit of fun. Why was it false for me to ask whether donations had been more or less than other people? And I said, well, if your donation was the right amount for you, it doesn't matter what anyone else gave, right? And he said, yes, I certainly understand that. And then he said, well, why do you have diamond donators up there? And you talked on air about the other people who donated them a good deal of money, and we did a segment of high fives and so on. And he said, I was happy for these other people, but when it came to me, I certainly did have a feeling of being left out of the fun. My question is, was that my false self feeling that? And I said, well, the diamond donator thing is underway to help distinguish those who, you know, get it and donated and those who are yet to get it. And I said, I would ask this, do you feel that I gave you sufficient positive feedback about your donation? My guess is no, for which I'm truly sorry. I've just ordered a new computer, so I will be able to send you your just desserts, and if you want me to recognize your donation on air, then I would be honored to, most honored. And he said, thank you, sir, for your patience with me about this and for your thoughtful and kind response. I am now very tearful and confused. I think you pressed a button. And so we wanted to talk a little bit more about that, and with his kind permission, the only thing that I've done is edited out his name. And I think this is an interesting conversation about how this kind of stuff, how taking risks, you know, sending money to this kind of show, can really be very, very helpful for people in breaking through. Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
I'm sorry for the little delay there. I just had to...
That's it. I got to start my day all over again. The calibrated house of cards that is my scheduled day. No, it's no problem.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much for offering to chat.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. What's up? What can I do for you?
Well, I was very interested in discussion that you and Greg had yesterday, and that was actually following on from a chat that I had with Greg. And he, I was asking him his opinion about something, and then he raised it in the Sunday call-in, which was unexpected for me, but it was very nice and very useful. But it was about this issue of transference that you talked about.
Yes, and so you guys had talked about it before, and this is the moment where he was talking about the relationship that people have with me and how volatile it can get and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't really talked about transference, but we had talked about the issue of the relationship with you.
Sure.
And, like, what is it and how does it work and what does it mean and that type of stuff. And, I mean, it's quite uncomfortable for me because, you know, I certainly don't particularly like that idea. It doesn't feel at all comfortable to think about it. But the discussion that we had last weekend, you may remember that I, as I said in my email to you, I got quite upset, I think that that some buttons got pressed in me, which are not your issue, you know, I would like to recognize it, and I would like to basically work out what to do about that and how to move beyond it, if you like.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, and this is the one where the generosity that you showed with this wonderful donation that one of the things that may have occurred afterwards that you didn't feel, because of nonsense technical issues on my part, and also because, I mean, I just should have been more proactive, that I wasn't as acknowledging of your generosity as I should have been. And then when I admitted that and sort of apologized, there was a fair amount of feelings and a fair amount of feelings that came up for you in that process. I'm just reminding myself to make sure that we're on the same page as far as that goes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was annoyed because I felt that I felt left out, just because I felt that there'd been a lot of interaction with you and Rod on the and the call-in shows, and also with you and Greg. And you know, I thought that was great, but I felt it was sort of inconsistent. I just didn't really feel particularly very much interaction with you,
right.
And so I kind of pushed you on it. And I kind of, I was sort of, I mean, I didn't feel particularly comfortable about it, and I certainly didn't feel comfortable being cast in that conversation in my own mind as kind of like as a whiner. You know, I just didn't really want to be, I didn't really want to be having that conversation, but there we were. And then you apologized, and just got basically into floods of tears.
Right. Now, I mean, there's two ways that we can do this, and either one is totally fine with me, of course. I mean, you can talk and just sort of tell me what's going on for you and sort of free associate, which is totally fine with me. Or I could sort of ask you questions based on some theorization that I might have about it. And, you know, whichever one works best for you is totally fine with me.
I don't really mind. I'm curious as to your theory, so why don't you throw it at me, and I'll see whether it fits.
Well, my theory is that what you're dealing with here, and I'm not going to keep talking about sort of my responsibility in the matter, which was not being as proactive as I should have been to thank you, or find some way to do it to call you or whatever. Right? I lost two hard drives in 2 days. So my computer setup was just a complete and utter mess. So I mean, it was an unusual set of circumstances that came about to bring that. I certainly have been, you know, but that, of course, was not your emotional experience. So my guess is that this comes from a sort of fairly early place in your life, because when we're very young, and I'm by here, what I mean is like 0 to 5 or 6 years old. When we're very young, we should not need to work to bring our parents' approval and to bring their love. I mean, we can't reciprocate in any reasonable way when we're that young. I mean, we're pooping, we're falling over, we're spitting up on people. Like, we're keeping them up at night. I mean, so we can't reciprocate when we're very young with our parents. And so I think what happened was that you felt that you weren't getting the... interesting, the right way of putting it. You weren't getting the sugar that you wanted for the generosity that you showed, which was, you know, very high levels of generosity, very, very generous. And I think that what happened was you broke a pattern, which is why I always sort of encourage people to talk to me who have a problem with me, because it's instructive. You broke a pattern because I think in the past you probably would have withdrawn or felt hurt or tried to talk yourself out of it and say, well, you know, he's busy or he's got these technical issues and blah, blah, blah. But you stayed with the feeling of feeling upset at me or feeling like you didn't get the thanks that you deserved, which was true. But you broke that pattern by saying, Steph, I'm not getting what I need from you. Or what you actually said, which was even more advanced than that, was, Steph, I don't feel that I'm getting what I need from you. And that, I mean, that's fantastic, right? I mean, that's the real level of honesty that makes relationships work, I think, really well. And so when I responded with, you're absolutely right, I'm so sorry, what can I do to improve it, and blah, 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 then you broke a pattern wherein you felt that other people were getting positive feedback for things that they'd done, and you weren't. And I don't know if this is to do with siblings or other people in your family when you were younger, but I think that it comes from a very early place, because what you did was you said that you weren't getting what you wanted. And then when I apologized, I think that highlighted something that was missing for you in the past. So this was a situation that brought up feelings of abandonment or neglect or something like that for you from a very early time in your past. And then you said to me, this is not what I want, and I apologize. That broke a pattern for you, and I think that that helps you to recognize that you were, in fact, treated badly when you were younger. I mean, it's very painful to be treated well, as I sort of emailed you, like somebody being treating you with respect and decency. I mean, it's painful because, it's sort of like I'm not even thirsty till I realize that I'm in the desert, so to speak. So that's sort of my thought about it, and I'll sort of give you, and what do you think?
Well, I think that I have a few thoughts about it. First of all, I mean, I definitely want to come back to the issue of, it's a bit spooky for me to be admitting that you may be, that there is a transference going on here where you are playing the, whatever, you're the father figure or something. That's right. Something we need to talk about because that's pretty spooky. But first of all, just in terms of what you're saying, I don't have any siblings, but I did have very inconsistent parenting. It just totally chaotic all over the place. Divorced parents, not when I was very young, from 0 to 5, they were together. So if that, I'm not quite sure, but essentially I had very inconsistent parenting. I was certainly left to my own devices a huge amount. All the way through growing up. And I think that what I was upset with was your inconsistency.
Right.
And that's what I called you on. And it wasn't so much, it was the inconsistency that was the issue for me. And what was upsetting me, or what was, a bit of a strange experience was, I think when you apologized, you recognized my feelings and you acknowledged the situation that had occurred. And I think that that's not an experience that I was prepared for or used to emotionally, because I think that what I got in the past, when I think about those feelings, was a lot of, yeah, well, it's, there's reasons and you don't understand and you need to go here now, and now we know I'm not going to be around next week, but then you're going to go here, and just a lot of general being shunted back and forth, staying with relatives, spending a lot of time on my own, being sort of shipped between my respective parents' houses, being kind of, I mean, for me, I spent a huge amount of time, and this is what came up for me afterwards. And I think what felt painful for me was that my parents both got together with second partners after they split up, and both of them were really bad people in different ways. The one that my mother got together with was just a very, very aggressive, shouty, irrational guy, essentially. But the point I wanted to make was that they got together with these other people and they tried to do their sort of lives with them. And I was kind of a leftover from the relationship before, and consequently, right. I felt very left out, because I definitely got the feeling, or I was given the feeling, that I was kind of getting in the way of their exciting new lives. As it happens, they weren't exciting new lives, they were disastrous in their own emotional sort of ways. But nonetheless, essentially, that feeling of being left out and just sort of basically kind of being,
like an afterthought?
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a pet that, I always sort of get this feeling, and when I hear stories like this, and I mean, it's a terrible situation to go through, but like when the kids want a puppy and then the kids go away to college and the parents are sort of stuck with the puppy that's now a dog, and it's like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
Great. It's like, well, it was fun for a while, but now the circumstances which have generated this puppy are no longer around, i.e. I remember my brother bought a guinea pig for his daughter, and when she was, 6, And then he found out later that the guinea pig lives for like 20 years. And he was just saying, oh, yeah, I can see her coming over when she's 26 to play with the guinea pig. Right. And that's sort of the feeling that I get, that that people just want to move on. And, you know, obviously they have responsibility for you. They're not leaving you in the street. But the circumstances which gave rise to you as a member of that family is sort of no longer around. So their investment is just, it's gone down quite a bit as far as that goes. Does that sort of make any sense?
Yeah, and then there's also it's not a case of pure neglect at all. I mean, for example, there were periods when, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I would be confronted with the idea that I was really important or whatever, and then that would get rapidly forgotten. It was the inconsistency,
sure.
that I think is. And you talked about it with regard to your mother, that, you know, if you were ill, then she would look after you and so forth. And so it's not that I was sort of just always, oh, there you are again or something like that. That isn't the way it worked at all. It just worked in the way that it was like, depending on whether or not there was another crazy plan going on at the moment, I was either there or not, but there was no real logic to it with regard to my feelings or you know, or my own sort of desires or anything like that. And I think that inconsistency is what then, you know, and I didn't really realize that I was sensitive to that emotionally in the way that I think I am sensitive to intellectual inconsistency, and I right. can spot that quite well, but it basically you know, what would then happen for me is that, as I said, I would get a whole bunch of stories about why this was all apparently just, you know, really actually quite right that I should be going to some disastrous dump school, and now I should be pulled out and gone to another one, and this all made sense, you know, because there are important plans and blah, blah, blah. It was all just a bunch of stories, basically. But what was kind of interesting in talking to you is when you apologized, well, you kind of took the wind out of my sails, really, because I was about to argue with you, and there really wasn't anything left to argue about.
Right. Well, this is, I mean, apologies, I mean, when they're heartfelt, right? And if my apology had not been heartfelt, you would have picked up on that right away, right? And you would have argued with me further, which you would rightly do, right? I mean, so, I mean, a genuine sort of, yes, circumstances and my own choices combined to make what should have been a very positive experience for you, which is, you know, donating to the show and this and that, it turn into a negative experience, which is certainly not what I'm looking for, even from a purely practical standpoint. But, you know, I certainly do respect the people who are contributing to this conversation. So for sure, I mean, I certainly didn't achieve my aim, which was to make to reinforce the positivity that you had with regards to that donation, right? So so it was great that you called me on it, right? And because otherwise I just don't know, right? And this is all about communication within relationships. And it was great that that you did it again, right? Because again, when you've had really bad experiences with expressing your needs, especially vulnerabilities, right? When you have had really bad experiences in the past, it's sort of like asking you to throw yourself off the same garage roof that you broke your leg on last time, right? I mean, it's like, why would I want to do that, right? So I'm certainly glad that you did mention it, and I'm very glad that, you know, obviously you were sensitive enough to recognize that I genuinely did not want you to feel bad about what had happened. And I think it's also great that for a variety of reasons, we weren't able to talk about it on a show, and I can't remember what the sequence of those reasons was, whether it was a timing issue or something like that. Because in a sense, I mean, and this goes even beyond the creepy stuff that you're talking about with transference, but this is sort of the true self engineering of breakthroughs that occurs, right? That the timing, of course, your true self didn't know my hard drives were going, and I have no computer for half a week, or actually almost a week. But you know, the generosity that you gave, and then the fact that you spoke up, which you probably haven't done for some time in this area. And of course, I mean, deep down, you knew that I wasn't going to be a jerk about it, right? I mean, I think deep down, after this many podcasts, you probably had some sense that I was going to be sensitive to what it is that you need and respect your feelings, right? I mean, you're going to respect the feelings of anybody who comes to you and says, this is what I'm feeling, and you're involved. I mean, any sensitive and decent human being is going to respect that. So I think that in a sense, you really did want to have that conversation with someone. I was a good candidate for it, obviously, because, you know, obviously we know each other, at least certainly you know me fairly well by now. So I think that it was, an excellent decision for you to do that. And it did, I think, give you a chance to break a kind of hesitancy in the face of expressing yourself in relationships that, because of the mealy-mouthed excuses that you got in the past and, you know, the fact that whenever you said what you did want, I mean, it didn't add up to a whole lot. It's not like you'd never get it. I mean, I certainly understand and respect that you weren't totally neglected or it wasn't completely random. But you didn't have that much of a say, right, in terms of sort of what went down. So do you think when you were given these excuses by your, I guess, caregivers, I don't even know what the phrase is. I mean, your biological
parents.
No, but there were the other people around too, right?
Well, yeah, they didn't really have direct responsibility. Their main role was, you know, more like their main role was basically essentially being the people who resented my presence.
Right.
They didn't have a direct responsibility in raising me. They were just the ones. They were the ones who definitely looked at me in the sense of like, oh, yeah, there's a kid involved. I forgot about that.
Oh, there's that one too, right? Well, I guess we're gonna go play the ball or something.
Yeah.
But when you get the excuses from your parents about why you had to go here or why this was going to be a good thing, do you think that they were talking to you? I mean, this is sort of a weird thing. I just sort of asked the question. Do you think that they were talking to you? Or do you think that they were mostly just making sounds to assuage their own conscience?
I think I knew from very early on that they were making sounds to assuage their own conscience, because I remember very distinctly, you know, knowing that this just didn't, none of this made any sense when I was a child. Have you seen the film called Together? It's a film about a hippie commune. Have you seen that film?
I've seen it, no.
It's an interesting movie because it's kind of it describes life in a bizarre hippie commune from a child's perspective, and there's two kids who come from a kind of suburban home, and they basically end up, their mum has to leave. It's all the relationships in it are disastrous, and in some ways it's kind of a bit of an odd movie because it has some weird moral sort of ideas in it in some ways, but it is very clear about one thing, and that is that it gives a child's perspective on one of these very chaotic home environments where the adults are basically running around just talking about all sorts of crazy, you know, ideas about what they think their lives are about, and they're trying to make this kind of hippie commune, and they're all debating things about, you know, who's going to do the washing up and all this type of stuff, and clearly there's all sorts of funny power games and weird stuff going on. And there's a great speech from the little girl in that movie where she just says, this is like upside down world. You know, they say one thing, but they do something completely different. None of it makes any sense. And it touched a nerve for me because I felt exactly the same way as a child. And I knew it. I knew it was all that none of it made any sense as a child. And consequently, I think that relatively early on, I basically also realized, because I grew up in a very similar environment, that if I wanted to get fed and do anything or whatever, I kind of had to organize a lot of that stuff myself, because I just knew that, you know, they were just random stuff was going on, basically. And so I don't think I believed any of the hype. At least I was aware that, you know, that I needed to look after myself and that all these excuses weren't really going to do anything for me.
Right. So it was just like people explaining themselves to themselves rather than having a conversation with you. I mean, it was totally, you know, when people are just talking to themselves, when it's one way and no matter what you say, the same thing, like it's going to occur the same way. And
yeah,
it's sort of like that was going on, that you basically would sit here, you know, you're not going to get what you want. And you have the additional almost humiliation of having to watch someone go through a tortuous kind of self-explanation, which is even worse than them just saying no and saying, I'm not even going to discuss it. Because then you recognize that they do have a conscience about it, but they figured out a great way to deal with the conscience, which is to just use you in a sense.
That's very true.
like is it that you're sort of the kid in the dike, right, with the with the water coming through, right? Like they'll just they know enough to know that it's wrong, and if they can just get you to sort of nod and say, oh, it's okay, right? Then they can. I mean, that's even worse than people just saying, "Eh, to hell with your kid. I'm not going to give you nothing," right? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the key, and I think children understand also that you know that they're being used, and that they're being used, and that what's being done is not for their benefit, but for the benefit of the adults.
Right.
And I did understand that these speeches. I think I understood that you know that they were not only meaningless, but they weren't even for me.
Right.
On one level.
And that to me, I mean, because I got a million of those speeches too, in boarding school and all this kind of nonsense. But that to me was the saddest part. Like that to me was very much the most heartbreaking part, was seeing these people who knew what the right thing to do was, and who just wanted to convince themselves that they were doing the right thing, but demanded that I participate as well. That to me was the saddest part. You know, that was the part that actually made me sort of the least hopeful, if that makes any sense, because then you at least figure with a really bad person, like just an openly really bad person, you either give up or they may at some point realize that they're doing the wrong thing, and it's going to come as such a shock to them that they might change and do the right thing. But with the people who know that they're doing the wrong thing but end up, you know, just manipulating and doing all this gross stuff, then there's almost like there's no way out of that room, right? It's real fog then, because they know but they're denying that knowledge, which is a whole lot different from people who don't know at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sort of kind of clear about what the feelings were that that came up. What I feel uncomfortable about is you being the being involved in that, because I really don't like the idea of you being a father figure. And I think also the other thing is that I think it's interesting to explore, because I think that I probably, you know, if I feel like that, I know there are going to be a lot of people on the board who are feeling it and are not aware of it in the same way.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that, for sure, for sure.
Because, to be perfectly honest, I there's not a lot of people that I would look up to in the world. I mean, there just aren't. And so it's a bit of a surprise and a bit uncomfortable for me to imagine that that I'm putting that I'm emotionally entangled in that type of way. It's uncomfortable because it's not your issue to deal with, and I'm kind of clear on that. But it's kind of let me just try and gather my thoughts here. For me personally, obviously, I want to kind of I would like to move beyond that. I feel quite good about recognizing it, because I think, you know, it's less spooky now that I'm kind of now that I have it within view, if you see what I mean.
Sure, yeah.
But I think it's also something that it would be worthwhile us talking about, because I'm curious to see your perspective on, you know, what do you do? What are we going to do about that, basically? And it's also worth talking about, because I think that there are some very difficult issues for you. If you're going to, and you talked a little bit on Sunday about your role being sort of like a coach, and you've also used the therapist model, but you've also used the model of this being a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very interesting word, you see, because I wouldn't see a discussion as the same type of a thing as a coaching session or a therapy session. A discussion to me is more of an equal to equal term. It may just be me, but that's kind of the expectation that I take from that. Hey, we're all, you know, having a discussion together.
Right.
And you have also used the phrase like of we band, of we few, and, you know, we together. And I think you might be setting up expectations there. And I'm not saying it's your fault or something. I'm just saying that it may be that, you know, some of the words that you're using, by the way, Steph, another one is that you talk about us having a relationship.
Right.
And you talk about that being a very important relationship. There's a lot of words there. And I think that it may be that people, you know, get confused expectations about what this is. And the fact that we're dealing with very, very raw emotional things means that, you know, you may have quite a fine line to walk in terms of dealing with, you know, if it's a, for example, if it's a therapy model, you've got 800 people on the board. Are you going to be doing a therapy model for, you know, simultaneously? That seems like a...
Right. I'd be like, yeah, the Keanu Reeves in that Matrix, right, with all these...
As I say, so for me it's very interesting personally, but it's also interesting in that, for example, we've dealt with some pretty raw situations. I remember the night with Jordan, you know, which was a very, very, you know, it was an amazing event. But I imagine it must have taken quite a lot of energy and thought from your side.
Yes.
And multiply that by 800, you've got quite something on your hands there.
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, you've brought up a lot, and I'll try and sort of take it in sequence. And I certainly do appreciate, I mean, this is exactly what I need to hear, right? Because, I mean, this is important stuff, and this is a fairly unusual way to do it, for sure. Mm-hmm. So I think that a therapist doesn't lecture. I mean, I'm terribly prone to it, and I try and fight that all the time. But a therapist, I mean, if you hadn't sent to me the email that said, I'm upset about what you did, right, then I wouldn't have been able to do anything, right, to apologize, to give you feedback, to sort of tell you what I thought, right? So in that sense, it was a discussion that we had, that part, right? Because a discussion is just two people sharing ideas or thoughts or feelings. You could say conversation, but therapy is that way as well, right? Even a coach is not going to just say, do this, do that, but it's going to say, how does it feel when you do this, and how does it feel when you do that, and what works best for you, and because it's around motivation as well as just giving instructions. So there is definitely a conversation in that kind of relationship. So I know what you mean, that perhaps I'm over-leaning on the equal-to-equal discussion points, but for me, the sort of back and forth that two people have in this kind of conversation is important, even if in some ways I'm sort of the coach guy or whatever, then to me that sort of discussion does occur. There are the wee few, and the wee few, at least to me, is not everyone who ever listens to my podcast, because the wee few with this, and like 25,000 people, and I don't even know who half of these people are, probably a lot more than half. So the wee few, I mean, there are people who are really digging into this conversation, right? And you know who they are, and so do I. Mm-hmm. And those are sort of more the people that I'm talking to. And I'm certainly trying to encourage other people as well to sort of step up and, you know, talk about things honestly and try to apply philosophical principles to their own lives in a more direct way. But the wee few is definitely not, it's not everyone, it's not all 800 people on the board, some of whom are just coming in, some of whom haven't been back for months, or some of whom have probably dropped off the conversation completely. Mm. So there is sort of the people who are really digging it in, and that of, you know, you're scattering seed from orbit, you know, when you have these podcasts out of the internet. So it's going to, you know, a lot of them fall into the sea, a lot of them fall into the desert, right? So it has to find fertile ground, and that's really the few that I'm talking about in that aspect, and maybe I should sort of make that more clear. As far as the aspect of transference, right, of people who then sort of latch onto me as an authority figure, let's just say father figure is pretty freaky to everyone, myself included, but let's just say authority figure. Well, that's very healthy. I mean, in my sort of conversations with Christina, my own experience with therapy, that's very healthy. So for instance, let's just say, and we don't even need to figure this out, but let's just say for the sake of argument that you were reacting to me as if I were a father figure in your, like in this sort of conversation that we had recently.
Yeah.
Well, that's very healthy because I'm not your father, right? And I don't act, I act in some ways, at least I would hope, in many ways, the opposite of how your father acts, right? Mm. So the fact that you were recreating a paternal situation with me is very healthy as long as I'm not like your father, right? Because if I am like your father, then you're just going to keep recreating the same rejection, right? Or the same confusion or the same feeling of not being listened to or whatever. So the fact that you latched on to a father, son, or an authority student situation with me was really, really healthy because it actually is how you break free of the unconscious hold that your history has over you in terms of we all believe when we're kids that that's all we deserve, right? I mean, that's how you get through it. And so that's healthy. What's not healthy is when people latch onto me as a father figure and then instead of using that as a crowbar to pry their original father the figure loose from themselves, that sort of father absolute, they just hang on like grim death and try and turn me into their father with constant provocation and constant hostility and constant negativity and all this passive aggressive nonsense. And those people, they just don't make it, right? I mean, just have to move on. This is triage, right? So some people just aren't going to make it. So I think it can be good, it can be bad, but I would look at you using me as a crowbar to get this father, this historical father relationship into clearer view, right? So if you learn to trust somebody who you would say is in some sort of authority, and this is just one aspect. I mean, tons of things in life that you would be the total authority relative to me, right? If you and I were in a different sort of conversation. So this is not like me being the authority figure and that's it, right? It's just in this particular area. I've just gone further, right? So, I mean, I'm looking back and saying, go this way, go that way. But in other areas, you would be teaching me. And so this is just this particular conversation. But that's how you change, right? Because you can't never trust somebody in authority ever again, because that's going to rob you of a lot of guidance. As when I never trusted any authority figures, I lost a lot of guidance too, right? So, you know, you have to sort of trust authority figures again. But when you have that recreation of that original relationship with somebody who then acts in a different manner, that's how your true self brings the real feelings to the forefront, right? And I think that's why you got emotional. When you put yourself in a situation of saying, I didn't get what I deserved, right? Because it was, I mean, your donation was extraordinarily generous. It was just, and you deserved to get praise for what it is that you did. And I didn't supply that in the way that worked for you. And not saying that subjectively. I mean, it wouldn't have worked for me if I were in your shoes either. So by asking me sort of what you want, you're saying, I'm going to go back to that place where I never got anything that I wanted, just to hyperbolize it for a moment.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do something differently now because I'm an adult, because this is a different kind of person who I'm dealing with. And that brings up a lot of pain, right? Because then it means that your parents could have done differently, as I did, but they didn't.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And I was very, very conscious of that just after which is why I said to you, it brought up a lot of feelings about my recent defooing.
Right.
Because and I think what it was is that I have intellectually processed a long time ago the fact that they could have behaved differently, I hadn't really. It's sort of what sort of was slightly overwhelming was realizing just how long those feelings were with me, just how many years, you know. I mean, it's like I kind of hadn't processed emotionally that they could have behaved differently and that I had those feelings for so long. And that's felt like a bit like the sort of opening of floodgates about past feelings that, you know, I kind of had not really looked at.
Right. So how do you think that's shown up sort of in your more recent life? That stuff, like sort of before this realization?
I think it's I think that it's meant for me, it's been I think my survival strategy when I was a kid was to handle it logically and rationally, like, okay, basically, what am I going to do? How am I going to avoid the crazy shouty guy? How am I going to, you know, where am I, what am I going to do about, you know, whatever, the fact that I didn't have, you know, the right clothes or any of these kind of, you know, just mundane things, but, you know, just all of these kind of practical survival things. And I think that I just shut down a bit emotionally. I mean, at least I know that I was very good at handling it on a sort of, I don't know, kind of like a project management style, if you see what I mean, as opposed to an emotional handling of it. Do you see what I mean?
No, I'm not sure I fully get it, so if you don't mind taking another run at it.
Yeah, I think that I dealt with things just unemotionally and only on the kind of practical level, and stopped myself from feeling what the feelings were going on, because they weren't you know, they just weren't pleasant.
Right. Right.
And I think I'm not sure. I mean, I definitely, I know that I spent a lot of time sort of in college and afterwards, you know, just involved in slightly random relationships that didn't, it was just, looking back on it, it's like, what were you doing? You know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, you know? I think that, you know, in the past few years, and it sort of started before this, but has been very seriously accelerated by this, I've been trying to kind of make sense of what I'm trying to give and take emotionally as well as intellectually.
Right. No, yeah, and I think for me, what I found was that I was sort of lying in bed with a woman one night. She was sleeping, and it just sort of struck me, and this was, I guess, probably 8 or 9 years ago. It just sort of struck me, you know, like it was kind of fun, but it kind of wasn't going anywhere, and I wasn't sure about the person, you know, in terms of, like, deep ethics or anything like that. And it just sort of struck me as, like, you know, I need to be getting more out of these relationships. Like, I need to be getting more. And I've got to stop sort of killing time with people, you know, like, yeah, have someone to go and see a movie with, like, you're going to live forever and you can correct all the, you know, mistakes you're making at some point in your life in the future. And, do you feel like, I mean, sort of what I would imagine would come out of something like your history is something like, a certain amount of passivity, a certain amount of, if you're hurt, you don't say anything, or if you're upset, you don't say anything, either because you feel like you're going to be inappropriately aggressive or because you just sort of want to avoid the despair of asking and feeling like you're not going to get it or something like that. What's it been like for you in terms of asking people or sort of communicating the real you or the true you to people?
So, sorry, let me just make sure I've understood the question. So what has it been like when I talk about my feelings? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what has it been like for you in terms of... yeah, I mean... It's not exactly talking about your feelings, which I'm sure that you do, right? But in terms of saying to people not just how you feel, but what you want, if that sort of makes any sense, what would really work for you and what your standards are and what are the deal breakers and what are the good things that you want, and really taking an active role in co-managing a relationship rather than, you know, I mean, talking about your feelings is not a bad thing, but people usually just kind of stop there. You know, I feel upset or I'm angry or this or that, but sort of proactively, because it doesn't sound like you got much training at all in sort of how to negotiate or proactively co-manage a relationship.
No. And I think that, I mean, part of me that I, you know, if you like, the dark side of that is that, you know, in my relationships in my 20s, there was... infidelity on my part. Not exclusively on my part, but certainly I would have to say that I did that, and also that I think there was just a general total lack of any clear clarity with myself about exactly, you know, what the values are. Right. And, you know, what exactly are we doing here? Apart from the general kind of, like, curiosity of, can I effectively get this very attractive woman to go to bed with me or something like that? Which is not a value. It's just more of us kind of just generally wondering about, you know, experimenting with emotions in a kind of slightly random way, I suppose. Well, not random, but just when you say, how did it feel when you tried to communicate your true values or your true emotional needs? I don't think I was being honest with myself about what my true emotional needs were. I think I was just wondering, slightly rudderless, in a very non-committal way. From one relatively short-term relationship to another, with a couple of exceptions, but not good exceptions, until my present relationship, which is very different because that has been 5 years and there's been a completely different approach from my part, and she is a completely different woman in that, we do talk about what our needs are, and I am actually now a lot clearer with myself about what my core values are, if you like. I mean, I've sort of actually got some. it's kind of an exaggeration looking at the past like that, but I'm trying to bring out what I think are the pertinent issues, and so that feels very different now, but it's also me who's kind of been the promoter of that in a way. So I have been quite conscious about, you know, and I must say your podcasts have also been very helpful in terms of just simply the kind of mechanics of how to talk about things. For example, the planting a flag about what your own feelings are. That was really useful to clarify, you know, how to talk about these things without essentially trampling on somebody else's feelings, but also not doing an injustice to your own. So I think that's got a lot better for me. And I think that's part of the general, it's two things. It's because the person that I'm with now is just a totally different person to the relationships that I was involved with in the past, and she, you know, being with her is therefore a completely different experience, but I'm also not dealing with it in the same way as I was.
Right. Now, what was it that you said that it was, I think the technical term you used was creepy, the idea of this sort of the
spooky, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, right? Something, I remember it being vaguely negative, but not exactly evil, something like that, in terms of how you felt about this possible transference in terms of the father figure. So what did you mean about that?
Well, I mean that, I have considered myself to be involved in an intellectual debate with you and others on the board, and I, it's definitely a vulnerability for me to be perceiving, to be having emotional sort of investment in some type of authority figure relationship with you, because that's not your issue. I mean, you're some guy in Canada who runs a podcast, right? And so it's definitely somewhat uncomfortable to me to think that I am putting an emotional investment in you, because
who the hell am I, right?
Who the hell are you? Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and what do you owe me? So essentially, you know, I'm way exposed. If that's the relationship, then
sure.
That feels like a huge exposure on my part. So that's why it feels uncomfortable. And also, it feels generally uncomfortable to recognize an authority relationship. And I think on some levels, maybe that's something to do with my past, but maybe on another level, I generally think it's kind of healthy to be skeptical of authority in general. So
So
it feels uncomfortable on both counts.
Well, no, I mean, I certainly understand that. And I just have sort of two basic questions. The first is, I don't think that I put myself forward as, or at least I try not to ever put myself forward as an authority because I'm me. I mean, this is the problem that most people in authority have, right? Is that they say, I am your boss because I'm your parent. I'm your boss because I'm your teacher. I'm your boss because I'm your principal. I'm your boss because I'm your boss or whatever, right? As opposed to, it's like the people who demand respect, you know, it's something you earn, right? I mean, authority is something that you earn by trying not to make too many mistakes. You know, I guess that's sort of the key thing behind, that's what I've always sort of as authority is something that you never ask for, you never demand. It's just something that accumulates over time if you just don't screw up too much. I mean, it's sort of the best you've been able to do as far as authority goes. So do you think that the authority is in me sort of as an individual, as you say, the guy in Canada, or is the authority sort of coming out within you almost involuntarily? And, the love word, which I've used before is, and this is nothing to do with love for me, but the love word is sort of an involuntary response to virtue, right? And I would say that respect or whatever is an involuntary response to somebody who kind of gets things right maybe more often than they get things wrong or whatever. So do you think that the respect is something, in a sense, that you have any control over? I mean, if I'm right, it's sort of unjust not to give me respect, just as if I was wrong, it would be unjust to give me respect, if that sort of makes any sense.
I totally understand that, and I don't have any problem with giving you respect. And in a sense, I think that the fact that I think you're, that there are some things which you may be incorrect about, and I have brought them up in the past, and there are other things which I'm still mulling over or whatever, I think that also is to give you respect, because in acknowledging that, I also acknowledge at the same time that there are some things that you have put forward which I think are a fundamental contribution to thought, and I think that you've done a fantastic job. So I don't have a problem recognizing that. I have a problem with my emotional involvement in the sense that, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for me to be in floods of tears after receiving an apology for you, if you see what I mean. It just doesn't feel right. It feels like I'm way right. too...
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, because you can't be a friend to me. In the same, I mean, you're going to have a certain boundary for yourself to do this, I guess. And so, I am. So I'm emotionally involved in an emotional one-sidedness, if you see what I mean.
Well, I certainly do understand that. And you could be totally right. I'm never in a million years going to tell you what you're right or wrong about how you feel. I just sort of say that I think with your parents you were involved in emotionally one-sided relationship, and you were on the short end of the not one-sidedness, right? The handle was all the goodies were on the other side.
Yep, that's pretty true.
Right, so I think that if you were in fact involved in a one-sided relationship, I don't think you would have had the emotional breakthrough that you had. I think that if it was a one-sided relationship, then you would be recreating your family situation and you wouldn't have had the breakthrough, right?
That's kind of interesting.
And this is why, as I mentioned on the Sunday show, and I'll never be able to talk about this except with, I think, the wisest people around with any kind of credibility, but you had the breakthrough because by giving me the donation that you gave me, you turned it into a two-way relationship. Right, so this is why I don't charge for the podcast until people are ready to pay for the podcast. because there's no point. There's no point at all, right? And by me not charging for the podcast, I'm actually recreating people's early childhood experiences where somebody's just supposed to be there for them, and it's not reciprocal, right? And as people climb up the ladders of the podcast, or whatever it is that they're doing, maybe it's not my podcast at all, but when they climb up the ladder of the podcasts, they grow, right? And then what they do is they go, okay, I've been taking and taking and taking from this guy, and I'm perfectly happy to do that. I mean, this is my ideal life, so I'm not sacrificing a damn thing here. But what happens is then, as people grow up, they then go, okay, this was a relationship where I was taking, right, taking bandwidth, taking resources, taking board, you know, taking time, and so on. And now I'm ready to give back. And that's when people break out of, that's how they grow out of this childhood stuff, right? This one-way thing, right? The sort of taking thing. Because we're all supposed to be takers when we're kids, right? When we're little kids. That's exactly how it should be, right? I mean, you don't have to breastfeed your mom back, right? You just sort of take the milk, take the resources. That's what you do. And so when you made the donation, it no longer was a one-way street, right? It no longer was a one-way relationship. And that's how you got the voice to say, I'm not happy with your response, Steph, to my donation, right? And that's how you got the breakthrough. So I think that you were unconsciously, of course, trying to turn this into a reciprocal relationship so that you could leave behind your enslavement to that sort of one-way relationship that, and enslavement is too strong a word, but that sort of those sorts of habits that you had that came out of your family situation.
Well, that's very interesting. In which case, do you think that I'm uncomfortable about it because it's... precisely because it's not one way, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's not one way, and you're now in a situation with an authority figure, which you should have been in, you're sort of moved up to the teenage years. If you don't, and if, this is just my theory, right? So this is all total nonsense. Sort of if it makes sense, it makes sense. Right? But the key thing I would say is to focus on is something like this. The issue is not whether you trust me. Right. The issue is not that you're making yourself vulnerable to me. The real question or the real issue that I would focus on if I were you is self-trust. Right? Let's say that tomorrow I turn into some raising, some sort of crazy, raving, Nazi-spouting lunatic, and they say, ha-ha, I've lured you all you people into my rational cave, and now I'm going to turn completely Charles Manson nuts on you, right? Well, obviously, that would be a shock, and it would be painful, it would be disappointing, or something like that, to whatever degree it would be. But I think the real issue is we never have to trust other people. I mean, the key issue is always trusting ourselves, right? So you trusted yourself to be vulnerable in a conversation with me. Well, first of all, you trusted yourself to give me the donation that you gave me, which is a certain amount of vulnerability, but which also gave you, it sort of vaulted you out of sort of a one-way relationship, which you should have had. It's sort of a reparenting kind of thing. And then you made yourself vulnerable by saying to me, well, Steph, I wasn't happy with this, that, and the other, and then seeing how I would respond. If I had responded exactly as your parents have responded, would have responded, the key thing is that you will trust yourself to recognize that, right, to survive that, to move on, to make the right decision with that information. Deep down, you knew that I wasn't going to do that, right? But it's self-trust that's the key. It's self-trust that's the key, not trust of me, because you need to trust your evaluation of what I'm saying, and you need to trust your evaluation of the content of my character, the content, the intellectual, psychological, emotional, whatever content of the podcast, and know that you're going to make the right decision, that if I do something that's good, then that's great, you can trust me, and if I do something that's bad, then yeah, you won't trust me, at least within that area to that degree. But it's really around, you hold all of the cards in this relationship between you and I and you and everyone, right? And it's not about trusting other people. It's about trusting our judgment with regards to other people, which our parents never allowed us to do because they weren't good people, right? They didn't want us to trust their judgment.
Well, that does make a lot of sense. I mean, in which case... I mean, let me just put then two questions to you about that, because it makes a lot of sense, but here's two issues that it would be... maybe interesting to see how you think we should handle these things. So firstly, there is still the issue of people's emotional involvement. Me, you know, I'm just an example in this, but let's say in some ways I'm not an extreme example, and there will be a lot more extreme examples of people getting very emotional, involved in their discussion with you. But as I said before, there's 800 of them, and that, you know, I just wonder.
That doesn't count the email.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I just wonder, how's this going to play itself out? I mean, it just seems. So that's one question: is how do you suggest that we as a community deal with this issue? Both me personally, but also you and the board or people generally of people's
game, right? Yeah.
Yeah, where are we going with that? Because we're really gaining momentum now. So it might be worth, having a bit of a plan. But the second thing, Steph, is I just wonder also about your emotional involvement, because, this must have been such a roller coaster for you. And I know that you also derive emotional sustenance from the reaction that your podcasts reach. And that's not just, I know that, in some senses, right, there could be an argument to say, you could just be putting out podcasts and you could be just saying, well, I'm really confident that I'm right about this mythology series or whatever. Let's see whether these guys get it or something. But I know that you are also invested in the response emotionally in some, maybe not all the time, but in some respects. So you have an emotional involvement too. So, and also, that's possibly something that it might be worth exploring how you're going to cope with that. Because you're setting yourself up for some strange interactions in this process, if you see what I mean.
It might be
kind of unprecedented, because of the psychology basis of the discussion. It seems to me like there's potential for some pretty weird stuff happening on both sides with emotions. And I don't really know what the plan is on that. So those two questions, and the last question I just wanted to raise is, and I mean this in totally a totally supportive way, but I do kind of understand from having followed the discussion from the beginning, and you've also been quite upfront about it in some ways, but not completely, I do understand that you are finding your feet in doing this, both intellectually and emotionally. I can see that although sometimes you sort of state there as being kind of a more or less of a grand plan, I can also see how you are effectively assembling the parachute on the way down.
Winging it, yes.
Yeah. Technically, you're winging it, which I think is just magnificent. I just think you've done an amazing job. But I can see, and I was thinking about some things like, why did you put the introduction to philosophy series where you did and so forth, and I can see that in some respects, and I may be wrong about this, but in some respects it seems to me that you have sort of assembled the ship as you go, and then you realize, oh, actually what we need is we need to approach it like this or like that, and that's all fine, but I'm just sort of saying, like, do we have an emergency, what to do, what to do in case of emergency plan for these three sort of things that I've brought up, and is there any way in which people who've been involved more intimately with this whole process can help?
Well, sure. I mean, those are excellent questions. I mean, I was pretty conscious of the fact that this job in 3/4, which I did for about a year and a half with the podcast and with, the 70 or 80 articles and so on, that it was too much. I mean, it's going to work for 8 or 10 hours a day, the commute, the podcast, the email questions, the board, the show on Sundays and so on, that it was just, it was too much, and it was not something that was going to be productive for me in the long run. I sort of make a choice, and the choice was relatively easy. So, I mean, the first thing that I've done to sort of make sure that I have enough energy for this is to quit my job, right? So I have another 60 hours or 50 hours a week that I'm not, going to work, right? So So from that standpoint, that's given me an enormous amount of time and energy to, like, I just finished doing all the landing pages so I can start the ads up again tomorrow. And so from that aspect, I mean, there's some really practical stuff, like you've just got to have enough time to do it, and you can't work a full-time job and run something like this because, as you say, not only do the number of people listening get bigger, but the depths that we plumb get deeper, right? And in so doing, they kick out more ghosts for people, right? You sort of disinter more bodies for people, and the emotional volatility of the conversation can go up considerably. So I was aware of that. And I don't think, I mean, for me, it was something that I knew when I did the mythology series that those who got it, and there would be people who won't get it until like 5 years from now or 20 times listening to the podcast, there'll be people who never get it. And Lord knows it took me long enough to get it, so there's no aspersion on anyone else. But I knew that that was going to cause a lot of problems. I also knew that quitting my job was going to cause problems because, you know, when you see someone do something courageous, I guess, then, you know, some people say, that's great, I find that inspiring. And other people are like, it's the hammer that sticks up that must be nailed. It's the nail that sticks up.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So I knew that there was...
We've seen that.
It wasn't exactly going to be a three-point takeoff or landing to this. The longer-term goal, I mean, if you're curious about it, the longer-term goal is obviously deputization, right? So if you're going to found a new school of martial arts, right? You know, you spend 20 years figuring out what you want to teach, which is sort of what I did, and then you teach deputies, right? I mean, it's the deputization of these sorts of questions and comments that occurs, right? I mean, so as people become more and more advanced in sort of understanding at least this approach to philosophy, like, for example, right, I mean, just to take questions about DROs, right? I mean, so we get new people coming in who have questions about DROs. I don't have to answer those anymore because there are enough people out there who understand the DRO theory that I don't have to. And they, you know, once you know something that's important and true, it's great fun to teach it, right?
Yes, so, yeah.
That deputization aspect, I mean, I'm certainly not anybody who wants a cult of personality, and I certainly don't want to be, you can't answer that because that's not in the DRO lexicon, right? I mean, let me delete your post and answer it myself. I want people to get in and debate, and that's why I'm trying to draw more people in from the outside in these debates, right? That's what's so great about the Sunday show, right? That we're sort of ready to go more into the world consistently and make these the case for this sort of approach. And it's deputization. People will inevitably step up to answer questions, particularly around some of the more technical aspects of anarchic social organization. But as people get more and more advanced, and there are certainly a number of people out there now who can do a lot of fantastic stuff with these questions that come in from people at a psychological level. So, yeah, I mean, the whole point is you know, you train people to do what you do, and then they do it, right? And then you can keep moving on to the next thing, so... There's that aspect is just already occurring. I mean, the people.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. Yeah. But what are you going to do about the hero worship?
Well, but that's what the humor is about, right? That's what the self-deprecating humor is about. That's what the big chatty forehead. That's what the songs are about, right? To continually puncture anybody's idea that I think of myself as, you know, some treasure to the planet or something. I mean, that's why, and that's the British history, right? I mean, which. Is sometimes used a little bit suffocatingly in terms of self-deprecation, but the hero worship is to just constantly deflect people from an interest in me to an interest in the ideas, right? And that's why I'll sort of talk about myself, not in terms of anybody being interested in me, but in a way to help them connect with their own histories. And that's why, you know, I make fun of myself, and that's what the humor is all about. And it's just to keep, you know, keep distracting people with that stuff so that they can focus on the ideas, because focusing on me isn't going to get anyone anywhere. As you say, I'm just some guy in Canada, right?
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I guess that really is all that you can do. And I guess there will still be people who get, you know, who get fixated on you and don't really know what they're doing and do that. And I mean, maybe that just won't have any traction because of the nature of the discussion. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe we just don't need to worry about that.
Well, so far it's been a remarkably positive, calm, peaceful, and great conversation, right?
For the last. Yeah, it certainly has. Absolutely, absolutely.
And I mean, I was reading, oh gosh, this is some time back. I should try and dig it up again. I was reading about some people who were doing a podcast. I can't even remember the content of it. This was quite some time ago. And I was reading their sort of journal about why they pulled the podcast, right? They pulled the whole thing. They shut it down. They, you know, said because they were getting hate mail. They were getting, like, literally people would come and stick knives into the tires of their cars. And, like, they just real volatility in that kind of stuff. And this is not unheard of course, in the crazy wild west of the internet, that there's a couple of gunslingers around. But I think that, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to start with political theory, right, so that I weed out, you know, who's, I mean, when you're crazy, you don't have a lot of attention span, right? Or if you do, it tends to be totally monomaniacal. So I started off a little bit with the political stuff and the purely theoretical stuff so that I'd weed out the people who were just too deranged to sort of stay in that level of conversation. So
Right. Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
So I really, I mean, it's...
And don't get me wrong. I mean, I think it is going marvelously well, Steph. You know, I think it really is just going wonderfully. And I'm not raising these questions because, you know, I think it's all, you know, about to collapse or anything at all like that. I'm just saying...
I hugely appreciate that. I mean, I can't see everything, right? So, I mean, yeah. That's what's always been great. And that's what was so great about bringing up the conversation with regard to Niels. I mean, that was great stuff. And, you know, and you really did watch my back there and really helped me make a much better decision than I was making and to push that decision forward, which is fantastic, right? I mean, that's all the time in the world for you, right? Because that's really great stuff. And it is always important to remember that there's something beyond the next podcast and the next post, which is sort of the bigger picture. And the only thing that I can see, again, since I really do believe in spontaneous self-organization, both economically in terms of how this thing is funded, but also in terms of the knowledge transfer, that people will bring others in, right? I think that over the next little while, we're going to do a lot more basics because people are going to start to bring other people into the conversation more, right? Those people who've sort of got... And I know that people are talking outside this sort of group that we have to try and get other people in, and they're going to try and bring more and more people in. Plus, of course, the landing pages with the 2 to 3 minute introductions to each of the major areas in the advertising is going to bring a lot more new people in. There's simply no way that I'll be able to handle that volume of questions, but people want to, right? I mean, they don't want to sit there and just listen to my podcast, right? They want to be philosophers, not listen to a philosopher. So
no, you're quite right. It does self-organize in that respect. So, and that is in some senses the ultimate demonstration of it being about the ideas and not about you.
Right. I mean, it would sort of suck if it didn't, right? If I'm an anarchist and don't I have to hand out badges for people to answer questions. I mean, people, nobody with any self-esteem wants to sit at my knee and learn stuff. I mean, they don't mind when it's like clear that there's a big knowledge gap, but they want to live this stuff. They don't want to listen to it. And the board is a great place for that as new people come in. So I know that Greg, for instance, is taking a number of questions from newbies about even some more personal stuff, because he was asking me about whether I thought that was appropriate. And it's like, as long as you're enjoying it and as long as you can set appropriate boundaries that leave you happy with the conversation, then that's great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Steph. That was really good to talk through with you. And I already didn't feel too bad about or too freaked out about it after I'd kind of realized for myself what was going on, but it was very useful to talk it through.
I'm very, very glad. Everything is recorded, which doesn't mean that anything gets podcasted, but what I'll do is I'll put this on a sort of secret place and I'll send this to you. You can keep it. If you did want to release it as a podcast, you can just let me know, but that's totally up to you.
Well, thank you. I'll look forward to listening to it and I'll let you know afterwards.
I really appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.